Probably. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD. And we got, I don't even know if you call him a veteran. I guess he's like legend status, man. He got 30 years of the game, man. He goes by the name of Professor Black Ops, man. So let's give him a round of applause and let's welcome me in The Textual Way. Man, what's going on, man? We've been supposed to do this for a while now. I ain't forget about you. The last time you shot me your stuff in the email and I sent it out, I said, man, let's get it done. So, first of all, can you tell the viewers about yourself and, you know, who you are, what you do?
Oh, yeah, that's no problem. Thanks for having me. My code name is Professor Black Ops. Like I said, we've been talking about chopping it up, so we could get it done. I'm 53 years old. I got 30 plus years in IT. I got 15 years in cybersecurity. I call myself the OG of the space. So I came on here to help people, right? So when you told me to come, I'm here. So I've done everything from junior programmer to programmer to web administration, application. I done Java for 5 years. I made my first bag in Oracle. Everybody think Oracle's a mainframe now. I'd had my first internship in 1988 on a mainframe computer. So that's how long I've been in the game, man. So once again, I just came out and, you know, we've been talking about chopping it up. So I'm glad I'm here. And I'm just, like I said, trying to help the space and trying to give out information.
Man, I really appreciate that because you know as I know, I mean, granted, when you started in 1988, I'll be 30 this year. So that was 4 years. So that was 34 years ago, right?
Yeah.
No, but you know, even back then, how hard it would probably see two people like us in the space. They got the experience. I'm pretty sure like most of the time it was only you.
Oh, yeah. That's one reason I came on YouTube. Like you said, it was just me and you. And really, it was just me before you got here. I got a few years on you. So it was just me. So, I want to make sure, like you said, we conjugate. I love your channel, your panel. So you can see people like us, like me, like you. Shout out to the women you had a panel on color. So I just want to let people, as you will, you're not out here by yourself. See, I'm pre-Google. When you got in trouble, you actually had to pull manuals off the shelf. There was no Reddit. There was no Google. There was none of that. Slack or Discord, man. You were really out here on your own. So, you know, like I said, I'm pre-Google and pre-Beeper. So, like I said, that's one reason I came to this space and to give out game and to help people any way I can.
You sound like me talking to, I got younger brothers and sisters, like they're high school and middle school to where, you know, they got apps. They take a picture for math problem. It'll do it for them. I was like, hey, he had that. I had to learn how to do the problem. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I appreciate that. So, how long you actually been on YouTube?
I just got on YouTube really like a year, probably a year and a couple months. Like I said, I was on YouTube. Then I follow TLA, Keep It Techie. They were like, come on YouTube, man. We need older people on YouTube. Like, it kind of hurt my feelings. I'm old, but then that made sense. So I like, let me give my game to the people. And just, like I said, help them, you know, do my connections and just get known. So I've only really been on YouTube for like a year and a couple months. Like I said, shout out to you and other people for helping me. I think I'm 80 hours from monetization, so I can see it.
Hey, if y'all are watching this right now, man, first of all, get the likes up and make sure you go follow Professor Black Ops channel because he does do a lot of great things. A lot of times when you're streaming, I'm busy, so I can't really just tune in. But he started like from the ground up, if I'm not mistaken, like an AWS course, like, you know, if you want to go in, tune in and watch that, like a lot of useful stuff that he's done on his platform. But so what I'll do is I'll go back to, we'll probably go back to right before 1988. Like, did you go to college?
Oh, yeah. I'm the prototypical guy. You know, back then your parents tell you got to go to college. So I got a bachelor's from Indiana State in 1990. I got my MBA in 1995, and I'm a thwinner. I'm a professor in real life. I've been teaching for 11 years. I think I'm about to stop because me and the school get into it. I'm going to bring all those classes to YouTube, right? I don't let students tell me what to do with something. So, yeah, I've been teaching for 10 years as part of my give back. Like, I probably should have flunked a few brothers, but I told them it's intro, so I'm going to help them out a little bit, give them a couple points in life. So that's what I want to do on YouTube, give people a couple points and give them a little push so they can get into this cybersecurity, just IT in general, to be honest.
Cool. So you sound like you're from the West Coast. You from the West Coast?
Oh, no, nah, man. I'm from Indianapolis, man. I'm from the Midwest. Oh,
okay.
Where housing is cheap. I've been in Silicon Valley and did some work in there. They were talking about $4,000 for a studio. I'm like, dude, I can get 10 acres with the horse. I've been in New York. I've been all over programming. So think of it. No, I'm in Indiana, man.
Trust me. And I'm from Louisiana where housing is cheap. Oh. So trust me. You know. That's a good place. Listen, if people watching this, I'm not like this big real estate guy, but you got some cash to throw away. You could put it out there. We got a big base out there, Barksdale Air Force Base. You know, you get some houses out there. Military going to pay for the people to stay there. You know, just throwing it out there. So with that, now I'm going to leave with a couple of other Indiana jokes. So, I mean, questions. So would that make you a Colts fan?
Of course. But, you know, Peyton Manning, even though New England was beating us up the pub, we were always in the playoffs for a good 10 years with Peyton Manning. Man, we thought we was going to win the Super Bowl. That used to hurt my heart every year. But shout out to the Colts.
Yeah. No, I'm a big Peyton fan. I used to I still go for the Colts when I can, but they told me I couldn't like both teams. you know, I used to tell people all the time they would try to blame him. I'm like, well, you got to think about it. Yeah, he had some good weapons for offense, but for most of the part, that defense wasn't as good as they was making it seem. They just score so much on people to where they'd be up ahead and they just let the pass rushers go. But when it came to crunch time, you know, they weren't good. The years that they had like top 10, top 5 defenses is when they either went to the Super Bowl or won it, you know?
Facts.
Who imagines what y'all would have did had Bob Sanders ever would have stayed healthy? That year he gave y'all, that was good enough to get that ring.
I met him in person. That dude is not big at all. He like 5'9", man, but he be coming.
He wide, though.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, he wide. Now, he about that life, but I think he knew he wasn't going to last, man, the way he played, man. He was just running downhill.
Now, in this league, he could play because it's not as physical.
Oh, yeah, but back then, you had big fullbacks running downhill in that.
I don't really see no big fullbacks no more, man.
I spread them out.
I played ball. I had some headaches from, hey, you better go blow up that fullback so that person can make the tackle. Okay, I'm going to try. I realized a long time ago that I just wanted to play. I didn't really care about going pro.
Facts.
But cool. So got your education. And then let's talk about that 1988 start. Like, that's pretty much that's where it starts at. Like, how was that? What's that experience like?
Actually, it was an internship. So it's my junior year in college. I get an internship like you're always preaching, and it's mainframe. So what they do in the mainframe is you got to put tapes in a very cold room because there was not enough space. So the JCL would come up and give you tape number, and it'd be like 20 tapes. You got to keep putting tapes on, because it ain't like it's a petabyte in your pocket back then. So you put the tapes on it writes the data on the mainframe and it can read it. So that's what you're doing. I'm in the park in a suit putting tapes on because they want you to learn when you start programming, don't be yelling at the tape room. So I'm in there freezing. The room's like 40 degrees. It's trying to keep the mainframe cool because you can fry egg on them because they were just got that hot. So that's really the beginning. That's my internship at a large state agency putting tapes on for a mainframe.
Nice. Yeah, man. Them things, I ain't have to do all that, you know. Years later, even just going to like the server room, so they's always cold. Like, man, anybody trying to stay in here? So let's go into when you pretty much you started programming. Okay. And like, I know it's different, like the languages have been a little different, especially like my recent reaction video I did where the guy was saying like a lot of people tell people to go towards Python, but he said, hey, looking to Go for programming. But back then, you know, what were y'all programming with?
I was doing COBOL and RPG. My first programming job, I was actually working for the university and I was on work study. You could get this kind of like a Pell Grant, they give you work study. So I was actually working for the statistic lab doing micro focus COBOL on a mini computer. So I was programming in 1988 for the university. So getting my experience. So when I got out, I could get my first job. Like you always talk about, getting an internship, getting experience. So I was about that life at the beginning. So that's what I was doing for the university. Yeah.
Man, and that's a nice way, because you had a meaningful work study. Like, I know a lot of people's work studies weren't meaningful. Just like, I say probably the first year and a half of school, my work study wasn't meaningful. I was just like, it's crazy. I think I talked about this a little bit, but what happened was I was working in one of the engineering buildings at LA Tech. And that's, I actually am thankful for us being places. She, my boss at the time, Miss Kelly, she did something with the account, but pretty much, you know, all these different, you're a professor. So whatever it is, you know, the university gives you guys all those, the funding with those credit cards and also where y'all can buy stuff and all that different stuff. So she would keep records and accounts of that. And I would used to help her. So I used to fill out something like the ledgers and all that crap, but it was boring to me. I didn't like it. And it just so happened that my other boss at the school at the time, where he wasn't my boss yet, his wife came in there and she was talking to me. She was a black woman. She said, "What's your major?" I said, "My major is CIS. You should work for my husband." And her husband was the director of IT at the College of Business.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up working for him, 2 years? The first year was like work study. Then after that, I didn't get, for whatever reason, I didn't have work study anymore, but he just brought me on as a student worker. And I was just a student IT tech, you know, for what, since what, 2012 until I graduated. But even that little bit did translate into when I finally started doing help desk. So I think that's pretty cool that you went that route. It's kind of what I tell clients. I had a consultation with a guy in college the other day, and I was like, you know, hey, if you're trying to do this, reach out to the, you know, the cybersecurity department at the school, see if they want to volunteer or, you know, have a spot open for you to do work study or something. Like, that's one of the easiest ways to network and just get you a little bit of experience, you know, just some of the stuff that we know that they're not teaching them. Because I've been, honestly, after dealing with like a lot of these college kids and stuff like that, and stuff from what I know experience from school, they're not setting you up to learn how to find a job. That's the one class they don't give you, how to find a job. That's what they need to, that's what needs to be in your curriculum, how to get a job. I would love to teach that class at universities or a course on that, but because you got people finna lose their mind because they out here, they didn't spend all this money in school, did all these tests, and now they can't work nowhere. And they then went back and worked at the grocery store, and people laughing at them because, like, oh, you thought you was going to be better than us and all that. That type of stuff that happens that they don't talk about when, you know, postgraduate depression and all that kind of stuff. But not to, you know, not to make the mood go down a little bit. Let's talk about like the, let's talk about that first, we're going to call like everybody like the first big boy job, you know, after school. What was that like, and what were you doing then?
I was just lucky enough. I came out in the middle of a recession. I got a job doing, it's called Pick Basic. It's another mini computer, and it was working for a third-party insurance. You know, a lot of times when you do your medical claims, it doesn't go to hospital, it goes to third party, figure it out. So I was working on a semi-relational system for that. I had a cool boss, and I was just off and running. I was a little depressed because in the recession, my first job, I think I made $26,000. So, but I was like, I'm going to get my foot in the door and I'm going to get rolling. And that's exactly what happened. Right. And I'm still cool with the guy today. And
that's early 90s though, right?
Yeah, that's probably, 91, 92. I need to look on my resume. Yep, early 90s.
So yeah, for inflation, that might be what, $50,000, $60,000 now, maybe?
Yeah. But you know, when you're young, you think you're going to come out, you know, and back then I thought I'd come out like about 50 or something. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get my foot in the door because it was really a programming job. So I was really excited. So I'm like, I'm going to get in here and kill it. And it just, it really set my life up. After that, I was just rolling downhill, man.
Yeah. For the viewers, you said semi-relational.
Yeah.
Could you tell them kind of what that is? I think you said semi-relational database, right?
Yeah, it was. Okay, if you know what relational database is, usually you have a master detail. It's two separate tables, and they kind of related to a surrogate key. The number one everybody says is customer address, right? It's one customer. You can have multiple addresses and multiple phone numbers, right? That's relationship. Semi-relationship is, that's usually two tables in Micro Focus COBOL. You had one record, and they call these things semi-tuples. So the relationship was in the same record as the first table. So that's why I call it semi-relationship. You want to hit, He wasn't linking them together with foreign keys and primary keys like you normally do in a relational database. So that's why I call it was a semi-relational, because you got to remember it was kind of a batch knockoff mini computer. So it wasn't fully relational like my next job. We talk about it. So that's why the semi-relational one table, it did these things like semi rows, and it was linked because they were in the same table. It's kind of funky, but.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny you brought back some memories from when I took my SQL class in undergrad with that problem in that foreign key.
I love that, man. I love that. Like,
funny, somebody actually group message, she just asked us about that SQL. I was like, man, I ain't touched that. Going on, what, 10 plus years, I didn't actually really look at it, even though, you know, if you're using something like Excel or Microsoft Access, that's technically what you're doing, just on like the display, like GUI side, that you wouldn't know that you was, what you was actually doing.
Right.
But so we did that job with the third party insurance. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the next leap to, I guess, like, we might skip some steps. Let's go to, because I think everybody has a job once in their career. What's the first gig you got that you was like, I made it? Like, I did what I said I wanted to do. Let's talk about that one.
Really, the next job after that, the guy actually became CIO of a mid-size. It's called AMA. It's actually Model Airplanes, which is weird. They got 7 million associates, and they make a big money. But so he's saying, I'm actually working in Muncie, Indiana, which is small. I'm ready to get back to the big city. He goes, I just took over this company in Virginia. I want you to come work for me. I go, I don't know, man. He goes, I'm going to train you on this database called Oracle. And you're going to be the DBA of Oracle. And you're going to do everything Oracle. And I looked it up. Those dudes was making 70. He said, I need you. I'm going to train you. I'm going to train you for 3 years. I'm going to give you all this training. You got to stay with me for 3 years. I said, bet. So he gave me probably $15,000 worth of training. Once I got that Oracle, man, I was off and running. Oracle just became GUI. So, it's Oracle 6.5 going to 7. They just turned GUI. And, man, once I got that Oracle bag, my next job, I've been blessed ever since, man.
Man, hey, that's really what it's about, man. I think that's what it is. It's like, see, you from the era, because you understand is you was born – and not to make you sound dated, because I remember a little bit of this too, because I'm a millennial, but I remember when stuff wasn't this accessible. Oh. Most of these kids probably born like after 1995, 96, 97, all those kids. They grew up in a time where stuff was more accessible to them, far as, so they can go on YouTube, or they can watch video on demand, I could do all this and that, you know. I remember having, and it's, I sound old saying this, I remember, you know, going, I think back in the day, TV Guide channel was like channel 10 or 9. I'm having to go on that channel right there trying to see what's going on for the night. You know what I'm saying? I know my dad is what, 57. So he always talked about the time, you know, like, hey, TV ain't used to stay on all night. The network used to cut off at a certain time.
3 a.m. I remember like it was yesterday. Go ahead, my father. I remember that, 3 a.m.
Nah, you good. it's just the fact of you know that what you know that with the knowledge is like, you got to put in work to get the money.
A lot of work.
And one of the big problems we got into in this pandemic is a lot of these people who ain't even really in the field like that, just finding stuff online, stealing ideas and selling courses, are pretty much hoodwinking people and saying, hey, yeah, come go get in tech and do my course and boot camp for X amount of time. You finna go get six figures. And then when it don't happen for the people, now they upset. I'm like, damn, like, because one, you was lied to, number one, why is a company going to, unless you just lying on your resume and you very good at interviewing, what company is finna come out and give you that? I mean, I know like people used to always embellish a little bit, but like I'm telling you now, I don't know if you done got a chance to see it, but I done seen some resumes, so it's just got some stuff on there that don't even add up for somebody who don't got the experience. Like the time I ran into a young lady who had like she has Splunk experience, all type of sims and stuff on there, but when I asked her what it was, she couldn't tell me. And her not knowing what I know is that, hey, and InfoSec, after you have about 2-3 years experience, you really ain't got to apply anymore because they're going to find you on LinkedIn.
Facts.
Like I don't can't remember the last time I really applied for a role. They find me. So that's some of the things that these people don't know that we know. And then I don't know if you're on Twitter like that, but you know, they get mad at people like me and some people that I had on the panel because we not for the BS. Most of us worked our way up to get what we did. We didn't just walk in and they, you know, unload the Brinks trucks to us. No. You know, so we sound like the old people. I'm like, hey, man, I'm just trying to tell you for real, because unlike other jobs, I take everything I do in my role seriously, because if something is messed up, it could negatively impact the actual business. I think a lot of people don't realize we're supporting a business, not that we just work into work. Fine. What we do supports this whole business. And if this business goes down, you might as well, you know, possibly looking for something else.
Oh, that's what I tell people every day. Shout out. You're never going to date me, man. My age is what I am. So you never have to worry about that. Like I tell people, and I tell people I do cybersecurity. We'll get more into that at the federal level. I was talking to my boss. If we get hacked, we got 34 million records. You get credit monitoring at $100 a record. That's $3.4 billion if we get hacked, if we got to give credit monitoring. So I can't make a mistake. Well, I can, but I'm going to get fired, right? Because I tell them, I'm about this security life. If you make a mistake in cybersecurity, depending on where you at, that can cost a company $1 billion with the big B.
All the time, man. And I've been on them calls where I was working for, I was a lead for MSS one time. And I jumped on the call. It was like, my manager was like, hey, so-and-so got hit by ransomware. So I'm in the call. And they were running around like chickens with their head cut off. Nobody knows what's going on. Disorganized. They didn't work on no contingency plans. I was like, and that's another thing. Everybody want to do the wild, wild west stuff in cyber, not realizing that policy-based stuff in writing, it's a bag there and it's important.
Oh, yeah. It was on your show, the guy with the hat. Y'all were talking GRC.
AJ.
That's how I make my first big bag on a GRC. So, yeah, facts, man.
Yeah, man. So, that's why my goal with this channel, number one, is exposure. Two, to educate. And three, just to give it to you straight, you know. Nice. Because you can go everywhere else, but when you come here, you're like, you know what? Hey, I might not like what he say, but you know what? He keeping it real with us right now, because you ain't gonna get it real like that from some of the people who just want your money.
Facts.
For me, I want you to pay me for my services, but at the end of the day, I'd rather not work with you if you want me to lie to you. I hold you accountable. If you ain't working hard, please. I'm like, I could show your coworker right now, or people that say, man, you always busy. I say, yeah, I'm studying. Like right now, I ain't even got a chance to really do the last, but Azure 900, just learn a little bit more about Azure. This content stuff, other stuff that I got in the works. So yeah, man. But that Oracle, man, so were they public by that time or what?
Oh yeah, they public, like, and they was just getting government, big government contracts. Because they were really doing government work before AWS, because AWS is not even started yet. So Oracle had all the government work, because you know, government's got all this things you need to do with encryption, FIPS 140-2, DR. Oracle had all that stuff from the federal side. So they would just print money on the Oracle database.
Because I'm thinking like somebody invested in them back then, man. They got some bread.
Oh, they did, but they fell off a little bit because they didn't see the cloud coming. Larry Ellison called AWS a toy at first when it first came out, because they had, you know, they were the big billy on the yard. So they didn't think AWS was serious. They were the big boy on the yard.
Yeah. So. I think that's what tends to always happen when there's a shift. I think what's taught me about how, because I have people ask me all the time, like in comments, I'm like, hey, Don, do you ever get bored of this and that? I was like, no, because I'm always, it's always a different threat, or I'm learning something new. This isn't most of the time, you know, you get the job where it's just super mundane and you start doing the same thing over and over again, which is one of the reasons why I chose it. And when I tell people, like, knowing your why for, you know, wanting to get in is another thing that's going to help you with longevity in the game. But being adaptable, that's probably one of the biggest traits and skill sets that you can have as, you know, as an employee, but also if you're a business owner. You know, we had so many great companies that didn't adapt. I mean, honestly, I kind of want stuff a little bit to go back just a tad bit to the old days, because I don't mind going to Blockbuster or Video One, you know, to go pick up some videos because, you know, that was family time. But a lot of people like the convenience of the, you know, I think the writing was on the wall when they ain't really give Netflix any mind, because when Netflix started saying, hey, pay this thing a month, you can send this back whenever you want to, you know, that was the game changer. You know, Blockbuster and them say, hey, you only got a week. And then they started renting out games, and then Gamefly was out there. And so all these different things was coming, and nobody told them, hey, man, maybe we should start doing this. We got the money now. We can spend the money and we can still be relevant. Or
the crazy thing is, Google it. Netflix went to Blockbuster and tried to sell it to itself to Blockbuster. And Blockbuster said, nah, y'all playing.
Right. And, you know, because anybody could have saw back then, granted, internet connections weren't super fast or whatever, but you had to see the way that technology was going, that this is something that would be lucrative. Just like all the phone makers laughed at Steve Jobs when they talk about the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Now look at them. Some of them guys ain't even making phones no more. And if they is, they just making certain things on the phone. Because back they had what? All the phones right then. You had your Windows phone. You had your BlackBerry. Because back then, HTC was a major player. Yeah. I would say HTC. Samsung had like the Blackjacks and stuff. I remember it was a good time for choice, but some of them guys didn't adapt good. Motorola. I mean, they make phones here and there. But yeah, shoot, I just thought about my last episode when I was talking about, you know, my first time hearing about Bez, BlackBerry Enterprise Server, or Good for Mobile. Like, you know, pretty much it's stuff that if people actually go and research, I don't know if people still use Good for Mobile. I know there's still people using, what's the thing called? Iron Mail or whatever it's called.
Mobile Iron.
Like all little technologies like that, mm-hmm. somebody can actually niche down and learn about and have a job just supporting that or just being an admin of it. So it's a million ways to skin a cat. You just got to find somebody that's going to show you how to do it. But let's see, you said 11 years. So the Oracle was still the 90s. Mm-hmm. What I'll frame it like this. What are some things that you noticed changing from, like, I guess, I ain't never really said like the old millennium, but old millennium to like the new millennium. Like, I guess as computing power started to double mm-hmm. and change, and also internet started to get faster. Yeah. So, you were actually in this field in real time dealing with all this stuff. And how was that? How did you, are there people that didn't adapt and then they kind of just stuck now? And then like, how was that? Well, did they ever come, you guys say, y'all better come learn this, this, and this? Or, you know, I'm just going to let you rock with like some of the questions I asked.
No, that's fine. The thing you just said is the phones, right? When you first phones, it was the pager and the phone. Now look at where we now. Where you got apps on the phone. In the '90s, weren't really people thinking of apps. The killer app is what you just talked about. Was the BlackBerry, because the BlackBerry had the email app. So you see all executives now. You got all the apps on your phone, right? So the transition is really from beepers to, you know, you got more power than what they launched a rocket with in the 60s, right? So the power you have, you know, people didn't realize GPS used to cost. You used to put these discs in your trunks. Now you got Google Maps. I tell you, for free. It's hard to be free. You know, people used to carry boom boxes. Now you carry your phone with your headset. So just the transition of the phone. The technology, you got to think, I was from the mainframe. Then it went to client server where you put all your apps actually on a PC. Then it went mini computer with Oracle. Now it's in the cloud, right? So I knew mainframe guys that couldn't master relational. I was laughing at those guys because, you know, I was like, relational's easy. The mainframe guys was like, man, I can't understand it. I don't get it. So some of those guys just faded away, right? Because everything relational. Now, some of the mainframe guys still working, right? There's a few mainframes out there. They make a ton of money. Then we went client service to relational, right? It was like, okay, we ruling mini computer. Then we went back to everything on the PC. Then we went back to mini computer. Now we go on, everything is in the cloud, which really is a mainframe. They just split up to me in the cloud, right? It looks like one box a lot of times when you look at them, right? Everybody's VM in boxes. I call it the mainframe. Y'all just VMing it to death, right? So that's a 8-year right. transaction. And there's a lot of people that make that leap, because when I went from relational to object oriented trying to do Java, I was like, I apologize to all the mainframe people because I was struggling at first because it was just such a paradigm shift going to object-oriented. So if you don't keep up with technology, you could disappear. I knew BlackBerry programmers were making $100,000. Them dudes don't exist anymore, right? And some of them didn't make the leap to the new stuff. So that's the easy and the hard thing about it is you can catch a bag if you jump on the new stuff, but even at 53, you got to constantly learning. I'm studying my AWS. Shout out Dewan. I'm about to take my practitioner test because I'm going to take out my security, take it up to the cloud, and that'd be my next bag. But that's a new technology. Now, I've done 3-tier on-prem, 3-tier on the cloud is similar, but it's different technology. So you got to continue to grind, continue to learn. Even at 53, man, I'm cracking open books like you, man, because I don't want to disappear. So that's it at a high level, man.
Definitely, man. Let me give you more insight for that because so I made this point about sometimes if I went to different company and I've said, you know, I understand it's a bad thing, but I do understand why sometimes ageism exists because I've worked with some people who are older than me, probably their 40s or close to 50s, and it's one of two things. They said in their ways or they just not getting it no more.
Thanks.
And we know in this field, you got to want to. You got to be able, somebody tell you something, you got to be able to want to change. You got to try to. Mm-hmm. Because it's frustrating if you're the person that keep messing up. And so that's one of the things I realize. And I don't know. I know it was a handful of people. I've been around some great people who've been older. They've always been pushing the needle for me. Somebody look at it. And I've also been over some people that were older. And I'm like just retire or just get off my team. Just give me somebody else. But sometimes I got to the point where I go take somebody from a buggy pusher and I can make them do some over what y'all are trying to do. Y'all over here stealing money. My uncle, when I used to play drums, stuff like that, he made jokes with us saying we stealing the church money. No,
that's facts. I'm glad I did an ageism video and a lot of people like it because that's what I was trying to be in there. You don't want to be old and in the way, right? Technology moves quick, right? So I want to make sure I'm a value add. And one thing younger people like working for me is if you're the manager, a lot of old people want to be like, well, I know more than you. I'm older than you. If you're the manager, my job is to make you look good, man. I got my bag. I'm not trying to be any way. I see a lot of old people. I'm like, let the young dude manage, man. Why aren't you helping him? They trying to overtalk him in meetings. I'm like, no, my job is to help you. So a lot of young guys, and that's too, like, you know, I get calls from a lot of young guys asking me questions like that. And I'm like, number one is you got to set precedent, man. You can't let nobody walk over. You're going to have to get on. And two is if you need something, call me, man. I'm the OG. I can drop you for a few knowledges because my first supervisor job went horribly. So I got some experience on that. Everything didn't go well. So, you know, how do you do when people are jumping over you, going to your manager, right? Those are the soft skills, right? So all that plays into it. But once again, as ageism, I got to keep my skills up. I can't do it because I'm old and cute right now. That's a joke, right? I got to add value to the team. And I think, like you said, a lot of old people are like, oh, I'm just trying to get to the retirement. I'm like, but you holding up the team, player. You got to add value.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, I don't know. I know for me, I end up being the lead and then some of the people was jealous, but I'm like, yes. If you look at your performance, it's the reason why they chose me and not you. And that's I kind of left it at that. Like, I remember all of us was in this group message and I said, you know what? In order for me to be effective, I can't necessarily be friends with them. I only had one friend at the old job because we used to work together. Mm-hmm. And another company, speaking of which, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw that McAfee and FireEye merged to Trellix.
I just saw that today. I was thinking about doing a video now. I just saw because they're doing a name change. Yeah, I just saw that. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I saw that because, see, I used to work for McAfee. So that's interesting because they were, I'm not going to lie, they were a sinking ship. I don't even know why places still use EPO, honestly. It's just outdated to me. It'll never work. Their SIM was horrible. I didn't ever really get to test their firewall, but overall, that place they started, it's crazy. One of the things I haven't seen, and I probably either do a video on this, you probably did one on it, I don't know, but workplace culture is it's actually a big, it could be actually be a big killer to your business. Oh, it can also be like a worm or something from the inside out. Like slowly but surely, they came in hiring people that didn't know what they was doing and then start, I guess, losing money and having to reduce workforce, but didn't have a real vision. So slowly but surely, you started seeing either people just straight up quitting, people getting laid off, or all the above. Like one of my other friends, me and him used to work at, well, Trellix, formerly known as McAfee, together. And when I started the new place, I said, man, listen, I can't take this no more, man. Are y'all hiring? I said, you know what? My director is looking for other people. Let me reach out to him. So I had got my friend just about on before I even started working. So I didn't even get a chance to refer him. But you know how bad it got to be for somebody just to go like that? Like, that's one of the things that's crazy. And you can't really, only sometimes you only can tell the culture is bad is when you go to somewhere where it's good. That's how you really tell, yeah, it was trash. That's how it was like night and day. When I left McAfee and went to Optiv, I was like, this is so much better. These people know what they are doing. Mm-hmm. These other people didn't. They hired people like one of our managers didn't know a sock was supposed to be 24/7. How did they put you over the sock and you didn't know that?
Well, the only reason I pause is I've worked in big companies where if you got the hookup, they'll put you there because they just think you managing people, right? So they think you just dealing with budgets. But like you said, they setting the culture, they setting the tone. So to be honest, I've seen that a little more than I would like. The hookup.
Man. I think it was just the person they hired used to work for the FBI. So I'm figuring maybe they thought he's going to have some contacts for some contracts or something.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine. But, you know, in the midst of it, spent a whole bunch of money to build a very nice looking sock. I'm talking about very nice. It was cool. Maybe I can find some pictures of it. But it's like you spent all that money instead of training us. Like they could have paid for some training over the money they used on the sock and then start letting us go. I'm like, I mean, hey, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, like you said, I've seen a lot of bad managers in my time. And, you know, you just kind of learn to work around them or you just leave, right? Because your skills get at a certain level where you're like, yeah, I'll just go do something else. So, and I've never done one on culture fit for me. I'm just kind of like, I'm going to work there. If I don't like the culture, I leave. So I've just always been that way my whole life. And I try to tell people, I feel like I'm going to change the culture, right? I'm going to come in. I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to make sure I help people. And I think I can help the culture move. Sometime I was right. Sometime I was wrong and I had to leave. So I'm not a huge culture guy, but I've been on a bad company where that stuff could really send you over the edge, right? It was just a really tough time in my life when I was at a horrible company. One of my second times being a supervisor. So yeah, I can definitely understand that.
Right. And let's talk about this real quick before we get into to some of the meat and potatoes. What's your view on job hopping? And I'll preface it first by like saying, I want to say like some of your generation came up in a time where they could go to certain companies and like by this age already been retired because you had those manufacturing jobs or those other jobs where, hey, you can stay there 10, 15, 20, 30 years, you know, it's fine. Like I remember I've said this often, but talking to my mom while I was navigating my career and I'm telling her, hey, you know, I'm finna go to this company. So I said, no, you need to stay there. They want you. I was like, mom, these companies don't care about no loyalty no more. They just want you to do the job. I was like, I can't leave money on the table because the money that they offering that I think I'm going to hold out and get the next time might not be there. The market may be bad. You know what I'm saying? So I might as well lock myself in, you know, at a company somewhere as opposed to, oh, well, that 2 years ago, y'all was offering this. Surely, you know, I can't always say it's going to be that, you know, that plentiful anywhere. So because I've seen that. I've seen like a lot of old people try to tell us that not knowing some people like you and other people who've been in the field long enough, like no. Job hop to get your experience and get your money.
Facts. No, I'm with you 100%. The thing I try to tell people is at least job hop with a purpose. What skills am I going to get for this job? What is the hot technology I know can carry me for 5 years, right? When I got Oracle really carried me for 10 years, right? So my first thing, I think, yeah, I kind of, But job hopping for me, as I might work at a job for 2 or 3 years, then hop. My mom was like, she's like, you can't keep changing jobs, boy. I'm like, mama, you don't know how these people do that. She got older. She goes, companies really don't care about you. I go, I just got my mom, baby. I said, baby, they get rid of me as quick as I get rid of them. So no, like I said, I just want you to do it purposely, right? What am I getting in this company? What are the skill sets? What are the domain knowledges I'm getting? And what is the tools I'm going to get? Right. So long as you do it with intention, I'm cool with it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And see, honestly, people, I'm for job hopping, but I wasn't a job hopper. Like I stayed at Opta 3 years and almost 3.5 years because in those 3 years, they allowed me to grow. I got a good raise every year, very good raise, promotions, title changes. I got to experience a whole bunch of things. So by the time the 3.5 was up, that was by the time I said, okay, at this particular position, I think I've did all I could. And I could have moved around in the company because I had made a good name for myself, but I did want to, I'm in fintech now. So I kind of want to experience that and see what's the difference, the financial sector over what I was doing already. So that was the reason why I chose to move. But my old manager, who's a director at that company now, she's a real one because she's told everybody, she's like, you know, I don't really expect any of my guys to, you know, to stay at my company or stay with us, you know, for X amount of time because you're trying to level up in your career. And she's also said, if you're a person that's possibly just never promoted or stay in the same place, it might be something wrong. You know, we need to look into what's going on with that. And to me, that's also a red flag as well. It's like, if I look at your resume and you did the same role for that, unless you like some type of consultant or something, but you just did the same low level role, like, you know, what's up? Like, so that's how I look at it.
That's true. And I'm sure we're going to drill into that. I've just been lucky. I've been at my state agency for 11 years. And before that, I was at DOD for 11 years. But in that 11 years, I had like 6 different jobs. Like you said, I was getting promoted and stuff. And my current job is I'm actually an advisor. I talk to the CIO, the CISO, and the COO from a cybersecurity perspective. Every day, and we do large audits because we get audited by the federal government. So so that's kind of why I've been a high-level consultant for the last 22 years. I had 2 jobs, so it's quite different. But like I said, I had many jobs in both of those assignments as a consultant.
Nice. So let's go ahead and segue into, like, present day now. Like, we'll segue into your pretty much like your cybersecurity kind of career and what you did with DOD and what you're doing now. Okay. You know, a little bit about that.
Okay. So I was consulting at DOD, and in the 3rd or 4th year I was doing, I got promoted. I was a web admin and application DBA. We were spinning up Apache Tomcat. I had probably 100 VMs I was responsible for with different teams. Back then, too, as I was programming in Java and Oracle, and I actually knew how to spin it up, so they put me on a web team and app team. Then DISA is the government's private cloud. They came out because the government's getting beat up by China, Japan, and Russia. So they said, we're going to teach y'all security. We're going to teach you STIG, CIS checks, how to harden stuff. So they brought these guys in to show us how to do that. So that kind of was my foray into cybersecurity. It's called ATO, or an authority to operate. So the system we were working on, you got all this hardening and all this paperwork. It's called a FISMA report, authority to operate. It's probably 1,000 pages of documentation. So me helping the web team and the app team actually harden it and do that paperwork got me started in cybersecurity at a federal level. Then she was actually the PM over 500 programmers. She became the CIO of a large government agency, and she invited me to come work for her because I used to help her. They used to send me to help teams. So she's like, I want you to come here and help me start up my cybersecurity program. So then once I started doing that, we report to the IRS, and I've been doing cybersecurity ever since. So that's kind of a quick foray how I got into it. And now, like I said, I advise CEOs, CISOs, so presidents, VPs. So that's kind of what I do in my main job. And I'm going to have those people on my channel so we can talk about what does management view in the cybersecurity? Because they really don't care about Linux and Cisco. They want to know, what is this bug or vulnerability? What's the risk of that colonists get hacked?
How much,
that's going to cost me? Yeah, how much it's going to cost? I don't care about none of that stuff. So that put me in the upper level. I'm a little grumpy because I don't even get to touch computers. They're like, we pay you too much. We need you to work on this compliance and make sure all the other teams are tight. So that's kind of what I do in my current job now.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because I think it's a thing people mostly do in the government. The term STIG.
Oh, yeah.
I heard it a lot. And somebody asked me about it before. I was like, I've never had to do anything. Right.
With it's STIG. A government term. Like,
What is it?
It's basically hardening what you do on any device. So it's the check. So like I say, I run Apache. That was about 250 checks they did. I got to put in a configuration. So the government believes those are hardening the system. When we did Oracle, I think it was about 300 checks. These are the checks we need to do in the config. There's usually 10% Cat 1s, a bunch of Cat 2s, and a few Cat 3s. Cat 2s, if you can fix them, you can accept the risk. They really want you to do a mitigating control. So it's a ton of paperwork so they can figure out the compliance of their organization and you can see the risk. Like, if you got a Cat 1s with a lot of stuff being attacked in a while, you're not very secure. But until you try to do those checks and do those scans, you don't know that. So STIG is just really hardening of your device. And they got them for probably 90% of the technology used. Then they got stuff called general. Like, this is general web server. So if you knew you using one of the new web server, they would just be general checks to put in. So STIGs is basically just hardening on a device. Everything from Oracle, Apache, Tomcat, Windows, Linux, Amazon Linux. They even got them for the cloud. So yeah, it's just checks to use to figure out what the risk is to your organization.
Nice, nice. And since you brought up the cloud and you said you do a lot more stuff with compliance now, how is that? Because I know, for example, you know, with AWS, I'm familiar with AWS and Azure, they both have like their own little advisor type things that can run, you know, in your cloud environment that makes suggestions. Has software like that made it easier for your job as far as to stay compliant and things you're working on or what?
A little both. It makes it easier because, especially Amazon, they said they handle all of the cloud. So they're going to make sure your routers are right. If you use one of their services, right, you can look on there. They'll tell you if that service HIPAA approved, FedRAMP approved. So they give you all that documentation, right? Then they let you configure, like your VPC. They give you the components, but they don't configure it for you, right? So I still got it. You're doing a three-tier, two-tier. What do you got open? What do you got closed, right? What you got open to the net? What you got closed? So I still got to check that you configure it right. The problem with that is a lot of small companies go, "Ooh, I'm in AWS, so I'm secure." I go, "No, you're not. You can still got to configure it, right?" So I think a lot of people misunderstand that there's still a lot of configuration. And two is there actually is called a government cloud. It's just for government agencies that they have to invite you in. Right. So I usually
That's the private version, right? Like just the government clouds.
Right. So you as a vendor can go in, but somebody's got to invite you in because they're going to use your product. So I review a lot of vendors that think they're ready to go on a government cloud. And I'm like, your encryption is not at FIPS 140-2. Your VPC is not right. Like you said, run the advisor. The advisor gives you somebody. But a lot of smaller companies, they're not to that level, right, to using those tools properly.
Those smaller companies might need to reach out to Byte Check.
Facts. So, yeah, so I think it's plus because Amazon, Azure, and Google got 1,000 security guys that are top notch. But you still have responsibility when you configure your setup and put your application in the cloud. You're responsible for that. And I think a lot of small, even mid-side vendors don't get that because I end up arguing with them. So,
yeah. And it's funny because what you just said reminds me of what most companies think, not even just pertaining to the cloud, is, oh, we got all these security advisors. Surely we're secure.
No. Well,
no.
Right. And two is you got to remember, too, when you do federal level, there's different levels. You can do PCI credit card, which is low, or you could go up to DoD FISMA, which is super high. Right. So you still got to make sure you're using the right components in AWS or Azure. That's can handle that level of security because they tell you if you're using this NoSQL database, it won't support FISMA DoD because it doesn't have encryption at rest at FIPS 140-2. FIPS 140-3 now, which is encryption you send to the government. They got to look at it and make sure you're doing it right. Just because you pull out the internet and they say it's doing AES, you don't know if they're doing it right. So they send their encryption to the government so they can look into it and certify it.
Yeah, definitely. But I'll even not even get that specific. They'll have the tools, but they won't be configured properly.
I know. I see it all the time.
They got a SIM and ain't nothing but out of the box rules that ain't been configured for nothing, none but noise. Fine. You got, you know, your Nessus and Rapid7 and your Qualys, all those things, they ain't been touched. So they just keep on firing on stuff that probably not even affecting, you know, your environment. Got like a lot of noise out there is going on. Your EDR not set up correctly. People missing stuff.
You talking to Vance. I'm talking about people. They got to configure it before they get to the EDR. But I feel you.
Right. Right. Well, I'm saying on my end, because see, I never had to worry about. I think it was only a couple of times when they brought up like something like SOC 2 to us. Like we say, oh, we got to make sure we're in this standard right here because they finna come in and do this audit. So I never really had to worry about it. I just always had to worry about, you know, are these rules good? No, what can we do to change them? You know, are they actionable for the analysts? You know,
That's one thing the STIG does is it tells you the base rules you need to get certified off. Now, there's a lot more rules they need. And that's one people why I tell people I like the STIGs a lot is a lot of companies not just hiring basic level people. So the STIG tells you exactly what that setting needs to be, right, to help you. Everybody ain't got somebody like you that got their skills. So if you, so they need a little help with the STIGs to tell you what their settings exactly should be.
Definitely. I mean, one of the things I do want to do, and this probably be into the segue into the next thing, but like I've been asking everybody like this is like, what's next? Mm-hmm. I don't know what's immediately next, but one of the things I do want to do is eventually with my poly branding, have my own, you know, consulting company as well, where mm-hmm. I get some government contracts or something like that. I know there's ways to do that, but even, you know, the expertise that's different that you bring. So what I do know from the brief time I was in government sector when I was doing with TSA, pretty much most of everything was locked down, which makes it easier to actually secure because people can't just run wild. Whereas you work for a company that's not public and say, oh, we don't want to make our users, you know, we want them to have freedom. Okay, with the freedom, this is what's going to come with it. So I think that'll be an interesting perspective because I've also had clients who's like, well, I'm not too familiar with, you know, not working somewhere that's not government related. You know, some people actually probably shy away from moving out of the government sector. And I can understand why. I mean, you know, it's cushy. I mean, I think you got to be real bad to get fired from a government job.
Yeah, unless you're a consultant. Yeah, if you are FTE and you have to stab somebody, you have to physically stab somebody. But what I tell people to do is my security clearance just expired. If you get a security clearance and you halfway good, I got fat off. I'm still fat from the government, man. That's some good check. And it's too, they do the FBI background. So once you, especially if you get a top secret, I had a low and I was just, they just told me I was getting my top secret certified. If you get a top secret and you halfway decent, you can eat real well on the government, man. Because it's its own language and its own paperwork. So once you master that, you way down. Like you said, we're talking STIGs. Most people never, at least you heard of them. Most people never heard of that. So that's a whole different language, whole different GRC, whole different authority to operate how you need a harding. So once you get that kind of mastered, you off and running.
Yeah, I got my secret is it's not active right now, but the current company, when I told them, I said, well, that's like, hey, if you wanted to get, you know, reactivated, let us know. Because I hadn't used it since 2016. I
understand. Yeah, mine's older than that. But people know, I work with this guy with a top secret polygraph when they were going into like super top secret places in Virginia. He wasn't good. He would go in and call people, but he was the only one who could go into the building, man, because he had a top secret policy. Some buildings, you got to have a top secret. He was ex-Navy SEAL guy.
And that's crazy because that goes into like, man, listen, I always been kind of like somewhat of a outspoken rebel, to say the least. Oh. Like when we worked call center, I was like, man, they underpaying us. You know what, guys? Let's tell them we ain't going to answer no calls for about 5 minutes. Until we get some, you know, situated. Nobody wanted to join me. Nice. What they didn't understand, what I understand was the fact that they couldn't just bring people in to replace us because they needed clearances.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, we got leverage, but nobody wanted to utilize it. So, but the funny, well, not, I won't say funny, but ironically, shortly after I left, they ended up losing that contract because they started losing a lot of their good people.
Right.
You don't want to move us up. You don't want to pay us right. That's what's going to happen.
That's the other real thing. I don't think we're going to get into it now is VoIP is just part of the network now. It used to be separate. So securing packets and securing call centers and bridging VPNs, right? All that's on the computers now. It used to be kind of separate.
Right.
All that's just on the network.
Yeah, because we had a whole VoIP team. We had a VoIP team. You had a networking team. You had a team just to set up the printers. Mm-hmm. You had an exchange team. We had camera. Like, I was like, they had a team for everything. So that actually kind of used to spoil me in a bit because every company now, like that, everybody don't have just all these different resolver groups to send it to. Back then, they made it easy, like figuring out who to send it. Oh, send it to tier 3 networking. Okay, bet.
Well, like you said, technology is getting better, so it's not as complex as it used to be. Like you said, it used to be everything. But now, voice packet and regular IP packet, they just packets, right? You got to make sure your firewall doesn't, you know, slow down your voice so it don't get choppy, but those firewalls are used to that. Like, so now as technology gets better, right, you got to move up the chain, right? And I believe you need less people. When we can debate that, there was some documentation saying, I don't need as many network people because I'm in the cloud. I just need a couple people configuring my VPC and getting my cloud formation, right? And we can automate all that stuff, right? So now I just need a different set of people, right? They're probably different, but I don't think I need as many VPC people because they automate all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel you on that one. So we'll ask you the question. This I kind of already said. Kind of I got some other stuff in that's what's next that I can't reveal just yet. But for you, what's next?
I'm trying to figure that out. I was kind of selling in, but I talked to some other people on YouTube, you know, they were giving me advice. I'm actually thinking about maybe being a CISO. I got invited to a friend of mine starting a business, so I might be a virtual CISO for him. I'm like, maybe I should give me some government contract. So realistically, I'm trying to figure that out. So my contract ends in June, so I'm just, I got invited to be advisor for a large insurance company. It's kind of like right under CISO. Somebody asked me to be a compliance director. I'm like, man, I want to be an SRE on a AWS. Man, I want to touch some boxes. So I'm trying to figure that out. I ain't touched a box probably in 5 years. I've got to start spending up my labs for my classes I teach on YouTube. So it's funny you said that. I was kind of like, I'm going to be a compliance director and chill. But people are like, oh, you go out here and get $200, $250. You can be a CISO. I'm like, you being a manager, do I want the headache of that? Right. Because you got to babysit. Right. First time I fired somebody, I almost cried. I can fire people at a drop of a hat now. No, I'm old and grumpy. But do I want that noise? Do I want to babysit? Right. So I'm really kind of just thinking about really what I want to do. My buddy was like, go somewhere, be a manager and hire us. Or, you know, I got a lot of young people on YouTube. I could like hire somebody, you know, have my own intern program. So to be honest, I'm trying to figure it out in my old age. I was going to go somewhere and be a compliance director, just chill. But a lot of people got me thinking of other stuff now. So I'm trying to figure it out, to be honest, man.
Nice, man. That's nice. Let's see what else I actually went. But, you know, we kind of made it to the end of the podcast. And I have Professor Black Ops information in the description, but is there any other place they can follow you at or get in touch with you at?
No, I'm just really here. I'm about to get on, like you said, on Twitter. I call it the Twitter like I'm old. So, I just kept me on YouTube, and I'm going to start branching out to other stuff, man. That's going to be my base. I'm old. I just want to concentrate on YouTube for a minute. I'm about to hop on Twitter, though, because I don't know. Y'all be getting beat up on Twitter. I might not want to go on Twitter. So now just catch me on YouTube. I'm out there grinding. So we'll figure out what we're going to do from there, man. I appreciate you for inviting me, man. And I love your panels. Everybody check my man out. Subscribe. He should be well over 10,000, man. I know he's going to get there. And anything I can do for you, just hit me up.
Man, I appreciate that, man. Y'all know where to find me. Look, like I said, I'm going to be the Joe Budden of Technology Podcast. With the next couple of years, I said it. You heard it here first. Y'all catch me at all my socials at my textualconsulting.start.page. In the description, book consultation, grab my ebook. You already know what to do. But hey, let's stay textual.